TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Yes, indeed. It's another edition of Raised by Wolves. Manny Hill and Dane Moore here in studio with you. Thanks so much for listening again on another Wednesday. Wednesday afternoon that we record this. It's airing, of course, during the 6 o'clock hour on Wednesday night on AM 1500 on Score North. And, of course, you can find this show, podcast, whatever you may view it as, on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you find podcasts as well. And, Dane, we get to talk about the Wolves winning a game. That's kind of nice. I mean, they win a game in New Orleans, a New Orleans team that's not great, but they're certainly talented, and they're trying to get into the playoffs. That was a pretty devastating loss for the Pelicans.
For sure.
But the Wolves come away with a win. It was sort of a weird game in that, at least, you know, I'll get your thoughts too, but to me, it kind of felt like the first half and the second half sort of mirrored each other in a way where there were times where the Wolves just looked really, really bad. Like, probably midway through the first quarter on until the end of the first half, the Wolves looked bad. And then they closed the first half on a nice run. And then sort of the second half, it kind of felt like the same way, and they were able to close the game, and you know, they were down by six with, about 6 or 7 minutes left or something like that, and they took the lead and never relinquished it and held on to win.
You know, I think it's just a kind of inherently sloppy kind of style. Like, you know, just when you're playing that fast and you're, like, putting more of an emphasis, whether it's in your rotations or, you know, to your personnel, like, in offense, which they clearly are and probably will going forward, like, it's just going to have a sloppier vibe, you know? And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, we see that throughout the league. It's just, it's where the league's rules have, like, moved the inefficiencies to, you know? So teams are pursuing that. But I was literally in that first half, I was thinking about, you know, covering this team and watching this team for the next handful of years, you know, so long as Gerson Rosas is in charge and Ryan Saunders is the coach. Like, this is how they're going to play, and it's always going to be a blitzkrieg pace, and it's just going to be so much like bing, 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 back and forth, up and down the court, and particularly whenever they are going to get lined up against another opponent like the Pelicans, who love to play fast, it's going to just be that on steroids, which is like partially like nostalgic me, you know, thinks back to some of it, you know, enjoying the, you know, the intricacies of a more half-court game, and, you know, desiring that a little bit more. But at the same time, you go, I look at it from Saunders' perspective, I'm like, well, your roster's teeny and fast and can kind of shoot. Like, yeah, if you're trying to win the game, like, that's, you know, that's how you're going to play. And that's clearly the type of roster that Gerson wants to put together, you know, going forward. So it's just, I don't know. I think that's, maybe we'll get more comfortable with that in time. But this is going to be the nature of the Timberwolves style of play in wins and losses, you know, for, you know, indefinitely, you know, until there's some sort of major change in the organization.
Yeah. And so one of the things that I kind of wanted to play today was something that we kind of do on a lot of various shows on Score North. We call it Confident, Concerned, Curious, where we find one thing of each about a specific team. In this case, obviously, it's the Wolves, that we're confident in, something that we're curious about, and something that we're concerned about. Or it usually goes confident, concerned, and then the last thing is curious.
The three C's.
Yeah, the three C's.
I've never played basically the game, but I'm ready.
But it's a lot of fun. So, yeah, let's just start with confident, and we'll each sort of just give our thoughts on what one specific thing we're very confident in the Wolves as they stand right now and going forward. To start with you.
Well, I guess this is more of a looking into next year sort of thing, but sure. It connects to what the Timberwolves are now, and I'm confident that they'll be a top 10 offense next year. And if you just look at this team in the time since the deadline, which it does include Cat in a couple games, but has largely been without him, they're 10th in offense. And I think maybe to some people that sounds like optimistic, you know, given that they've been such a bad team this year and for the past, you know, couple of years they've been bad. But they have the personnel, they have that style of play that we were just talking about that is going to lead them to be an effective, you know, offensive team. And then I think the question becomes, you know, if that's true, and I don't think that's like a hot take to say they're going to be top 10, then you look at it around the league, and typically the top 10 offenses, I mean, if you look in the league last year, the all top 10 teams won 48 or more games last season. And so I'm not saying the Wolves are going to win 48 games next year, but they're going to be cool on that side of the ball, mm-hmm. is what I guess I'm saying. I'm confident that this is going to work. You saw the pick and roll over and over again last night with D'Angelo Russell and James Johnson or Naz Reid, who, you know, credit to Naz and Johnson, but, like, that's going to be an even bigger monster when it's Karl Anthony Towns. And if you believe that Towns wasn't being maximized offensively previously in his career, the other four seasons, and you know that they were the worst they've ever been in his career is 13th in offense, like, yeah, this seems like they could be not just top 10, but there's potential to be really up there as one of the best offenses in the league next year.
Yeah, and that kind of plays into what I was confident in as well, is that, you know, this team is going to be very good offensively, and now they have, it seems like now they have more pieces to the puzzle now that fit what they really want to do. But also
pieces who are going to, like, look like the pieces, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I could see things changing up, but I'm with you. Like, the shape of this team. This is we knew the blueprint was all along. These are, like, the guys who fit the blueprint, and theoretically they'll get even better guys who fit the blueprint, you know, going forward.
Yeah, for sure. And to sort of play off of that, I mean, I think this is where you, considering what they've done to this roster now, I think you have to give Gerson Rosas a lot of credit for basically turning over a roster in less than a year,
yep.
so to speak. I mean, and the fact that he's been able to do this and sort of construct a team that fits a little bit more to the style of basketball that they want to play, it gives me confidence that this team has the right guy in charge. Now, obviously, a lot more things need to play out, but I feel good about it, I guess, is what I'm saying. Like, that's what I feel really good at, in that the franchise, from a basketball operation standpoint, is in pretty good hands. And I mean, it just seems like there's a lot more. I mean, you've been banging on this drum for weeks now, that there are a lot of really smart basketball people in that front office now, and I think we're really starting to see it.
And I think it's important to point out that Gerson Rosas is a rookie.
Yeah.
In that role too.
Yeah.
So he's like, I don't know, use the, not to compare him to Zion, but it's like a rookie or John Morant, who's like, you like what you've seen out of them in their first year,
mm-hmm.
but inherently that means they're going to get, theoretically, it means they're going to get better over time. And I'm with you. I think Gerson has done a lot to reshape the roster in a way that makes sense to me. Have there been bumps along the way, things I've questioned? For sure. But most of those, you know, are more like politically.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we've talked about this before. I think they got work to do with this fan base, which is a hell of a job, you know.
Yep.
But as far as, you know, kind of the public relations of the injuries and those sort of things, you know, just the transparency there, I understand being like hidden in some ways, but I think there's just like a better balance where he could get even better, Gerson, that is, at all the elements of being a president of basketball operation. The thing I'm for sure confident in is, like, he knows the hoops.
Yeah.
He knows how to construct a roster, and that's the most important thing. And I think we'll see growth on the margins from him in all sorts of different ways of being a manager, of a president of a company.
Yeah.
I mean, there's reason for you, I think, to be confident, and I think there's reason to think it could get better from a managerial standpoint going forward.
Yeah. All right. Concerns.
Yeah. You go first.
Yeah. I'm really concerned about the defense. And I think it's probably pretty obvious. I mean, it's For everything that we love about what they're doing offensively, even in the absence of Cat, which we can get into a little bit later, I guess my concern is just how do they get better defensively with this collection of players, or if that is that even like possible for them to move the needle a little bit?
Yes. I mean, they're literally since the trade deadline last in defense.
Yeah.
So you're 10th.
There's nowhere to go but up.
10th in offense. Yeah. 30th in defense. But like that, to your point, like the offense, it doesn't really matter if you're going to be last or one of the worst teams in the league. They're 10th in offense, but overall in point differential, they're 23rd.
Yeah.
So you're a terrible team.
Yeah.
Even with a really good offense. So it is the concern. The reason I have had substantial concerns about the defense and the style of play they've been playing with the entire season. What's been really interesting for me, and I think almost reason for optimism as it pertains to defense, even though the production isn't there, is they have completely changed their style of defense since the trade deadline. Now, was that necessity forcing invention in that Cat's out? They don't really have any big players. They don't have a rim defender, so they've just decided to go super switchy when they're in man or go to zone a lot. Yeah, probably some.
Mm-hmm.
But if there was one definitive characteristic about the Timberwolves defense the first 50 games of the season, it was that it was dogmatic. It's similar to Tibbs, and we're doing this.
Yep.
And we're doing it over and over again. We're pounding that rock. We're pounding that rock. It's not working. We're still pounding it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that not just for this team, but for all teams, you need to have a dynamic defensive set in where you can do different things.
Mm-hmm.
You need to, and maybe that still is their baseline of their defense, is when they're asking Cat to hang back as a rim protector and using him that sort of way. Maybe that won't improve over time. It was obviously really bad this year. I could see that progressing. But I think I have a little bit of optimism that by throwing out different looks, you could see something blossom a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Toronto, I think, is the greatest example of that with Nick Nurse. Is they're the most dynamic defense, and they're not afraid to try a bunch of different things that are so matchup dependent, their personnel dependent, their opponent's personnel dependent, and dependent, and it makes them effective against different types of opponents.
Because you're going to be. Teams are going to, if teams go into every matchup against you and they know what you're going to do defensively, they know what your identity defensively is going to be, they're going to find ways, they're going to find holes to try and exploit that.
They did, man.
They expose that.
There's no coincidence that the Timberwolves, the defense was kind of okay at the beginning of the year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you remember the D'Angelo Russell going off, the James Harden going off, Bradley Beal going off, Devin Booker going
Kyrie
off.
Kyrie went off too, right?
Yeah, well, Kyrie was the first game, but it was once I think the book got out there of like, oh, like the Wolves are doing the same thing defensively every time.
Mm-hmm.
If we attack that through one strong offensive initiator, that guy can go for 40.
Yep.
Like, not like might go for 40, like will go for 40 if we go at that over and over
40
again.
40 at least.
What I'm saying is like the book got out there.
Yeah.
Which, in ways subtracts from what they were doing defensively. But again, I take it to my point of like, that's fine to throw out that one look, but then be willing to adjust.
Yeah.
Like ironically, I guess, when D'Angelo Russell had, 52 against the Wolves? That was the perfect example of a game to me. I was like, you're playing the Warriors, who have nobody, and D'Angelo Russell is a player who is perfectly comfortable with just, if you're dropping your center back, coming in, stepping in, and pulling up from 16 feet, and he's going to make half those.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's hot, he's going to make 60, 70% of those. And the Wolves just said, that's cool. We're going to, that whole game, we're going to let, D'Lo do that. And they ended up winning the game. So I guess that maybe deflates my argument a little bit, but
but they had to grind to win that game.
They had to grind to win that game, and that Warriors team was really bad.
Yeah.
So it's like, why not adjust a little bit? Why not adjust a little bit? They played the Pacers in back-to-back games, if you remember that, a couple months ago.
Yep.
And it was the same thing both games. It was Brogdon and Sabonis over and over running the exact same pick-and-roll action, and the Wolves refused to defend that action with more than two players. Over and over again, they got beat. The last play of the game, it was what they'd done the whole game. Brogdon comes in, you're shading over to Sabonis, wide open, like 10-foot floater. And I think there's for sure analytics applied to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because generally speaking, a mid-range shot from D'Angelo Russell is not a mid-range shot from anybody isn't a great look. A floater from somebody is not a great look. But it dismisses the notion of getting hot.
Yeah.
And that a guy that if they know what the defense is going to be, there's more comfort in that action. And they go, oh, I made the last three of these. Like, I'm going to step into 16 feet and I'm going to hit this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's to me, and that's an argument, that stuff matters. Like, and, you know, to be able to, you know, as the cliche goes, you got to throw different looks at them. Like, yeah. I just think.
Well, it's like in football. If you're a defensive football team, I mean, you can't just rush four defensive linemen and drop seven the entire time. You're going to have to mix in some blitzes once in a while to give the offense a different look and to sort of throw a wrinkle into what they're trying to do. You don't want the offense to be comfortable, and that's, to your point, that's exactly what's been happening.
In professional sports, whatever, when you know what your opposition is, they're going to throw you. Every game is set up for talented offensive players to thrive.
Yeah.
So they had this whole saying of they do have this whole saying of solid is enough, and I fundamentally disagree with that. I don't think it's enough. It clearly hasn't been enough this year. Maybe they would argue in the future it will be enough, but I don't know. I think dynamic might not even be enough. Like you gotta bring it. You gotta throw everything at this team because you don't have good defensive talent.
And shouldn't the goal be to be as great defensively as you possibly can, even if you don't like. It's like you should want to be even if there's like no chance in hell you're going to be great defensively. Like,
yeah, like why throw a ceiling on yourself?
Right. Like, yeah. Why not just continue to strive to be as great defensively and as dynamic, like you said, as you possibly can? I don't know. It's
yeah. I think it's just a math thing, honestly. Like, if they were sitting here, they would run out the numbers and say, well, if that shot happens 50 times a game, that's going to equal X amount of points.
Yeah.
And that's hard to argue with, but it does dismiss dismisses the notion that sometimes moments are high leverage and they matter more than others. And you got to be able to have something else in those moments. You want to call it clutch time, you want to call it whatever, end of the quarter, to give a different look. And it's not like they never did that. It was just, I don't know. I mean, it was dogmatic in we're doing this and we're doing it over and over again. And to their credit, like, I think it's a good idea that they're trying out different things with this group.
Yeah.
And yeah, people are going to point to the defense still stinks like you did. They're last. That's right. But when I think about a big picture, like that is encouraging because I personally see a ceiling on the style of play that they were playing defensively prior to this. So, mix things up, like the definition of insanity, right? Like doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Like Cat has functionally played a very similar style of defense the entirety of his career.
Yeah.
And I mean, Tibbs is out. Vanderpool came in with this game, not all that different. Like, and to me, this is all about what is the best defense for Cat to run. And I don't know. Would he get burnt switching? Would they get burnt if they went zone all the time? Would they get whatever? Choose your thing. Maybe. But what I know is they always get burnt with the style. They have always gotten burnt with the style of play that they've played in the past year.
Right.
They've been bottom six in defense every year.
And because we haven't seen Cat play another style of defense, like, how do we really know? And obviously, like, they see him in practice all the time, so they know more than we do. But on the surface, it's kind of like, well, how do we know that? Like, I just want to see what it looks like, a different style of.
There was a brief window. There was a brief window of that, and it was before Tibbs got fired, after they got Covington and Sarge last year.
Mm-hmm.
They got far less conservative defensively, and they said they were using Covington up at the point of attack, and when Cat was involved in it, he was playing up there aggressively, trapping, or at least playing up to the level of the screen. And, I mean, how good was that Timberwolves team?
Yeah. We were talking about Robert Covington being a defensive player of the year candidate.
Yes, because and you become a defensive player of the year candidate because your team's defense is awesome. And for that month, it was awesome.
Yeah.
It was. And so, I don't know, maybe that's a small sample size. It was like 11 games before Covington initially got hurt and whatever. Maybe they weren't playing great team. I don't know. I saw moments of Cat having success defensively, and I saw moments of him enjoying playing that way. I question his joy as a defender when he's just playing in a conservative scheme, dropping back, and just trying to limit shots at the rim. I think what he wants, if you put him down True Serum, and maybe this wouldn't be right, but he would say, I want to get out, I want to get out and switch. I want to be out checking a guard on the perimeter. I think I can do that. I think I'm athletic enough. And you know, maybe there's a middle ground there, but if you can get Cat to love the defensive style you're playing, I think that could have a real positive impact on the defense going forward. Now, maybe they're just going to always be hamstrung because D'Angelo Russell isn't very good at defense. Yeah. Juancho Hernangómez isn't very physical defensively. I think Malik Beasley, while he's a good athlete, I think he's undersized. He's thin. He gets overpowered sometimes. Like, they don't have a good group of defenders. But, I mean, mess around with it. Go Houston Rockets. What you watch these Rockets games? Now, they're not like, they're like, we're just going to try and mess with you. Like, we know we can't, like, physically stop you, but we're going to throw all these different looks at you. We're going to throw weird doubles. We're going to throw a ton of different looks. And it seems aesthetically that those Rockets players like that.
Mm-hmm.
That they like the challenge. And, I don't know, there's just something to, like a psychological impact on playing conservative.
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, seems to show up.
Yeah, well, and I remember, you know, 5 years ago when Cat was at Kentucky, and there was that debate over, well, who's going to be the number one overall? Is going to be Cat or Jahlil Okafor?
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, we've seen how that played out, and obviously Cat was clearly by far and away the better choice.
I actually wanted Jahlil at the time.
I think a lot of people wanted Jahlil, which was obviously dumb, but I just called myself out. Dane, I will tell you, like, you probably remember this. I think at this point of the year at that time, I think a lot of people had Jahlil Okafor number one with a bullet, and people liked Cat, but so much of it was just, oh, he's so much more polished in the post, and he's, you know, his footwork and his offensive game on the low block is going to be great, and all this other stuff.
Well, and what Cat was doing at Kentucky isn't what he's good at now,
right?
So, I mean, that's probably why my judgment was jaded, is I was judging him off of, you know, what we're seeing on the floor at Kentucky. And, you know, the draft analysts or the Timberwolves were looking at workouts.
Yeah.
His workouts and what they saw him do. They're like, this dude can shoot. He wasn't shooting at Kentucky.
Nope. Like, John Calipari would not let him.
I know. So it's
he wouldn't let him shoot.
That's a funny revisionist history, but
I just remember, like, thinking back then, you know, when I really got a chance to watch Cat play in the NCAA tournament, and they went to the Final Four and all that with Booker and all those guys. And there was still sort of that debate over, okay, Cat versus Jahlil, who's the guy? And just from, like, watching Cat and watching Jahlil, I kind of had that thought, like, I feel like Cat might be a little bit more versatile defensively. Like, he might be a guy that could get out in the perimeter and be, because he's long and he's sort of,
yeah,
he's long and lanky. He seems to move a little bit quicker than Jahlil could. I mean, Jahlil's like a throwback guy, a throwback big man.
Sure.
But then, like, to your point, like, we haven't really seen, 5 years into his career, we just haven't really seen him be used in a way where he can step outside and try and defend on the perimeter and be a sort of a more versatile guy.
At least when we've asked him, he says he thinks that's something he could do. It's just not what the scheme currently asks him to do. And he buys into the scheme. He's like, no, this is, I trust in Ryan. I trust in Vantapool, like, that this is the right thing to do. But he's like, when, because it does happen. I mean, you don't just get to run your defensive system every possession.
Right.
Like, sometimes things just break down and you're switched into a weird situation. And he's like, I'm confident in those spots. I would just like to see them put some confidence into him. Say, okay, let's try it. You know, let's see what it looks like. And if he comes back this year, you know, I'm curious to see them use him like James Johnson. What does that look like? I don't know. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
What are they? 18-42.
Well, they have to lose.
And literally, I mean, maybe they don't want to do it because it might make them win.
But it's like, what better time than? I mean, listen, they're 18-42, right? Like, what better time to experiment and try some different things than?
And that's what I'm saying. To their credit, they are doing that right now. They can't, if Cat, you know, Cat's wrist is broken, they can't play him.
Right.
Know? But given this set of circumstances,
but if he comes back this year, will they explore that more?
Ryan has said that even when Cat comes back, they will play more. I asked him about that after the last time. They'll play zone. They'll continue to play zone, and they'd only do that very sparingly earlier in the year. So I think things are going to become less dogmatic defensively. I think that is a fair projection.
Raised by Wolves. Only on Score North at scorenorth.com.
Hey there, it's Phil Mackey for Federated Mutual Insurance Company, and Federated is here to give business owners out there peace of mind. You pour your life and energy into a business, and the last thing you want is for something to happen that puts you on the defense, and that's where Federated comes in. Based in Owatonna, Minnesota, over a century of experience in standing behind business owners. If you're a business owner and you want some more peace of mind, go to federatedinsurance.com to find out more about your local Federated marketing representative. Federated Insurance, it's their business to protect yours.
Raised by Wolves, only on Score North and scorenorth.com. Also available on demand on the Score North mobile app, Spotify, Apple, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
My concern is that they won't be able to sign Jordan McLaughlin, and I think that would be a good thing to do.
Yeah.
He'd been terrific in this run, and the concern I have comes from the notion of, like, it's not like it would cost them a lot of money to sign him, give him a rest of season contract, maybe even multiple years. The issue is that they're in the luxury tax right now.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are like, oh, whatever, just pay some more money. Well, the issue is, it's not just literal cost, it's like opportunity cost too. They're trying to get out of the luxury tax for the benefit of next season. Like, this isn't even necessarily like a Glenn Taylor paying the tax sort of thing. There's advantages to finishing the year out of the tax. They worked out a buyout with Alan Crabb. They haven't worked out a buyout with Evan Turner.
That's coming though, right? I would think.
I mean, the deadline is passed for him to be able to be eligible on another team.
Oh yeah, because that was Sunday, wasn't it?
For the eligible for the playoffs, but he still could, you know, and then he could go sign somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So, if those things are in the works and they're trying to get, you know, they're like just under $500K into the tax, if they're trying to cut that money, and say, you know, hypothetically say, eventually they can get Evan Turner to take a $500K buyout. Well, then you're like, okay, cool, we're out of the tax. But then as soon as you sign Jordan McLaughlin, even if it's just for a 10-day, you go back into the tax. So it's like, it's one of these situations where I think pretty undeniably McLaughlin's playing like an NBA player, like legit player. And they're just up against this rock and a hard place of, you know, well, they're not quite at the rock and the hard place. They'll get there once his days run out. But they can't pay him and stay out of the luxury tax.
Right.
That, you know, that's kind of the issue. So that's where my concern is. And
how many days does he have left?
It's not publicly available information.
Okay.
From what I've heard is they've literally taken every single possible angle to maximize those 45 days. Like, he never practices with the team. There's all sorts of things where you can loops to jump through in that. And the Wolves have taken all those with him and Keelan. And they've made, I mean, 60 games into the season, they've made it so somehow those guys have not spent 45 days with the team.
Yeah.
But you can't make a whole 82. You can't do that for all 82 games. And
right.
Jordan McLaughlin is a huge part of this team right now and somebody, you know, that they'd want in the rotation for the rest of the year. And the reason I have concern is I think he might be a fine backup to have next year.
Yeah.
And if you can have him
he's
at the minimum.
Well.
He's playing really well.
Yeah.
He has, if they're three wins since the trade, they're 3-7 since the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
The Clippers game, he was 11-15 from the field, had 11 assists.
He was great.
They won that game. The Miami game, he had the game winning bucket over Bam Adebayo. And he was 4-for-5 from the field in that game. And then last night, the third win, he was 6-of-7 from the field and had another 6 assist game. I mean, he's shooting 89% in their three from the field in their three wins, you know, since the deadline, or 89% from two, 56% from three, with 7.3 assists per game in those games. I mean, that's just a legit player. And we're not talking, I mean, those aren't garbage time. Those are literal wins over the Clippers,
yeah,
the Heat, and New Orleans, all three of which might be playoff teams. So he for sure deserves credit, you know, for what he's done in those games. And he's been good in the seven losses, too. He literally doesn't shoot mid-range shots. When he gets to the rim, he makes it. And when he takes threes, he makes half of them. Like, what more do you want, at least offensively? The defense has been better with him on the floor than when he's been off in the time. Like, I know these games are kind of irrelevant or academic, but in what is happening in the game, Jordan McLaughlin helps his team win. And to me, that's a signal that, you know, if this team is, shooting for to be a 7 seed next year, could I see Jordan McLaughlin being a backup of a 7 seed team? Maybe. Like,
kind of looking like it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, people are going to point to the size, but it's hard to point out a lot of examples of how his size really hurts him. You normally think about that in two ways. Finishing at the rim, which he does really well. And
he's dunked a few times.
He can get up.
Yeah.
And then being able to defend. And he's scrappy enough and physical enough defensively where guys can get up and shoot over him, but he does a good job of like pushing them into a two for that shot. I think about like the Toronto game, he's guarding Kyle Lowry. Kyle Lowry got some on him, but it was like he ran him off the line and got him to take like a, you know, a contested 16-foot pull up two.
Yeah.
And like for a guy who's like listed at 5'10", he's not 5'10", he's smaller than that. To be able to do that, I mean, I think he's fine at that too. Like it's an NBA player for sure.
Yeah, and it's not like you would be relying on him to be your starting point guard for 82 games and no. to log heavy minutes or anything like that. It's almost like this role is perfect for him, and he's thriving in it. He's playing the best basketball you could ask him to play in the role that he has on this team right now.
And maybe the argument is like, all right, D'Angelo Russell is always miss time every year. Would it be, you know, talk about next year, like, would it be too much to ask him to be like the main point guard?
Right.
Well, you could compensate for that in a couple ways. You could sign a third point guard on the roster, or we know what they want to do is have their wings initiate offense. We were told to the end of the age or whatever you say there that Jarrett Culver was going to be that at the beginning of the year, that he was could factor as a factor in as a de facto point guard, that Andrew Wiggins was going to be able to do that. Like I don't think if they have guys like that, that they feel can be wing creators from the wing, then point guard isn't as much of a need. Like I think they could get away with, even in a playoff push, they could survive with Jordan McLaughlin as their starter, given that, you know, other guys probably that they would get this offseason or maybe in development from Jarrett Culver could help, you know, supplement that in ways. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I would not be disappointed if I'm looking at the depth chart going into next year and I'm like, oh, yep, Jordan McLaughlin's the number two. And particularly if he's making like 900K. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
By all means.
Sign me up for that. All right. Now, what are you curious about?
I am curious if the Brooklyn Nets will make the playoffs. Because
That pick is lottery protected, right?
Yes. They got two first round picks for Robert Covington, one from Houston, which will be like 24 or something. They sent that to Denver for Hernan Gomez and Beasley, and they kept the Brooklyn pick, which at the time was, you know, it was lottery protected, but you're like, oh, the Brooklyn's like the 7 seed. That should be as good of a lottery protected pick as you can get, like 15, 16, 17. Like, you know, that's going to be a good pick. They're still, I mean, they won last night. Caris LeVert went off.
Yeah, how about him?
Yeah.
good for him, because I root for him.
He was always my, if D'Angelo Russell didn't happen, that was the guy I had my eye on as like the backup plan.
Yeah.
Whatever, separate tangent. But, but like, might Brooklyn fall out of the playoffs because
Kyrie's out
for
the year.
They just shut down Kyrie.
Yep.
Now, I don't even know if Kyrie is how helpful he is anymore. But you think about it from Brooklyn's perspective, right? Where would they want that pick this year or would they want it next year? You know, I don't think they'd be that mad if they missed the playoffs. They get that pick, a lottery pick, mm-hmm. because they have missed the playoffs. Like, I know people don't love this draft, but if that's the 13th pick or something, could they trade that to help bolster a roster next year around KD and Kyrie Irving, you know, right. to make another move to kind of go all in to be a contender next year? I don't know. They might get a little tactical in losing games going down the stretch. The issue is I don't really know who's going to take that spot. Is it going to be the Washington Wizards?
Right now, I think it's Washington.
Washington's the 9. Orlando's there with him, you know, at the 8. But, like, it's still, I think it's 4 games that they're still up. But there's 22 to go.
They're 5 up on Washington.
5 up. So, yep. I mean, but it seems like I can paint the picture where Brooklyn incentivizes themselves to lose, whereas Washington seems the other way about it. They're, you know, trying to do everything for Bradley Beal. Mm-hmm. He would really want to be, you know, be in the playoffs. Like, I don't think they're going to, they're clearly not prioritizing, like, tanking. They're the, you know, the 9 seed fighting to win every game. Like, I just think that, you know, that could be something that happens. And that, I'm curious about it because if the Wolves lose that Brooklyn pick for this year and it rolls over to next year, then they can't trade their own top pick because they've already traded next year's. You can't trade your first. You can't go 2 years in a row.
Stepien rule, right?
The Stepien rule without having, you know, having a first round pick. So now, like, I don't know, something player X becomes made available and you have the number 3 overall pick. Well, you can't just trade that out without another first coming back. So it, like, again, there's some opportunity cost there of, like, it would be advantageous to the Wolves, in my opinion, to have that Brooklyn pick and not have it roll over to next year, even though 2021 is supposed to be a better draft. Brooklyn should be good next year. That might not be a good pick. Mm-hmm. Like, I just think that it's very good for Minnesota if Brooklyn makes the playoffs because it opens up, like, another path to take, a more open path to take in being able to trade their top pick, which I gotta think they're heavily considering doing this summer. Like, I don't know why they would love the idea of drafting a 19-year-old.
Right, and having him sit and develop and...
Right.
We're wondering for the next 3 years, you know, what type of player is this guy going to be? Because we're already kind of wondering that with Jared Culver right now. We're like...
I can't picture Gerson Rosas being like, oh, I'm going to take that risk. I feel like he's going to want to trade that by many means necessary to, you know, to be able to turn... If you can turn that into another guy who's 24 years old, like Kat and like D'Lo, and you know, roll it out. You got that James Johnson expiring next year. You could go get a name. We've talked about this before, you know, and I know a lot of people hate Aaron Gordon, but like somebody like that, you know, what James Johnson plus the pick, does that get you Aaron Gordon? What about, you know, what about trading Culver and that pick? What, you know, what does that get you? Another young player on a rookie deal? Could you, somebody who you like more than Culver? Like, being able to trade that pick is important, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
And having as many options as you possibly can.
That's more what it is. You're right.
Yeah.
Having as many options as you can. So, I don't know. That was the first thing I thought of when I saw that. They got my little Shams notification that Kyrie's out for the year. I was like, oh, where's Brooklyn in the standings?
Yeah. How's this going to play out?
Yeah. I mean, in the East stinks. Like, Washington's bad. So it'd be hard to see them make a push, but there's ways to for Brooklyn to hamstring themselves if they want. And as we know, that's what that happens a lot of the time in the final 20 games of a season, just historically. So I don't know. We'll see you there.
What I'm curious about is how much better this team. I mean, this team's already playing pretty well offensively in Kat's absence. How much better can they be if he's in the lineup and healthy? And again, we don't know how healthy he's going to be or when he's going to return or if he's going to return this season or not. We just don't know. But I'm curious as to how much Kat can move the needle with this group offensively.
And yeah, it's kind of what I was saying at the beginning of, like, it's not that hard to paint a picture where a Kat and D'Angelo Russell led offense is similarly good to Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis in Dallas. That's the number one offense in the league. Like, I mean, maybe Rick Carlisle is unlocking a ton of stuff there. Maybe he's one of the best coaches. Maybe that's a factor. Maybe they have other good pieces around there. But if you just look at the top two players, the way they fit together, the importance of pick and roll in today's game, and what we're seeing in D'Lo is that ability to, when the screen lands, be able to dice guys up. And even when the screen doesn't land and the guy's out there defending him tight, he can make extremely difficult shots mm-hmm. in those isolation situations that follow a pick and roll. I mean, that's a weapon. And you pair that weapon up with Cat, if they find that synergy, that could be so dynamic as an offensive spot. Like, what do you start doing defensively against that? If you're a team and Cat and D'Lo are rolling, like last night when it was New Orleans, they were trying all sorts of different things in the fourth quarter to stop a D'Angelo Russell Naz Reid pick and roll. They couldn't do it. So if that's Cat, that's even at a higher level.
Yeah.
Like, you got to, now you start saying, do we have to start throwing a third defender up to that 30 feet away?
Like we talked about before, you're going to leave Malik Beasley open on the wing?
I mean, and that's why this whole plan makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes a ton of sense. If that at the top with Cat and D'Lo is elite, to have those guys surrounded by shooters, even if they can't play a lick of defense, like, good luck keeping up scoring with the Timberwolves.
It'll be fun to watch, at least. Stopping anybody, they'll at least be fun. There'll be a lot of points scored.
That'll take away from it some. But if you're just isolating that part of the equation, like, I don't know if everyone's healthy, why that can't be really, really good offensively.
All right. Last thing before we get out of here, switching to some league-wide stuff. I want to talk about the Eastern Conference a little bit because we touched on that a little bit, but I just want to get this off, just sort of
I don't know where
mention,
this is going.
Mention this and just sort of throw it away because I'm just like the Knicks, man. Like,
oh God, yeah.
It's just, and listen, I'm not shedding a tear for Spike Lee. Like, Spike's going to be fine, obviously, right?
Yeah.
But it's like the whole thing is just such a really, I feel like we're having an evergreen conversation here, but the whole thing is just such a bad look for the Knicks.
Terrible. It's just terrible. I mean, as people say, like, the owner is just a critical part of team success.
Yep.
In the NBA, you can have a lot of other pieces in place, and if you don't have an owner that is, you know, giving you an environment, a positive environment, it can just cut away at so many different things. I mean, I know everyone is like, well, 2021, when there's all going to be all these free agents, and like the Knicks are going to get somebody because they're going to have all this cap space and all that.
But they said that last summer.
I know.
It was like everybody was thinking the Knicks were going to be huge players in free agency last summer, and they didn't get anybody.
So who's the guy? Who's the guy that is like, yeah, I'm going to come and be that person? Like, I don't know. They've hired Leon Rose to run the, you know, as the president of basketball operations for them there, who's Kat's agent, by the way. You know, maybe he has relationships, you know, around the league where he can say, you know, we're doing things differently now. But it just, as we learned with the Timberwolves, man, once you dig yourself a hole that just echoes incompetence, then it's hard to get guys, you know, it's just hard to get guys to come.
Mm-hmm.
For so long, it was just, even when the Wolves had cap space, it was like, it doesn't matter. Like,
right.
I mean, in recent memory, we've had, you know, Taj and Jeff Teague sign, which isn't even that big of a deal. And, you know, Jimmy comes in. But when you get labeled in a way like that, it can just be crushing.
Yeah, it sticks with you.
Yes.
Who is the biggest challenge for the Bucks in the Eastern Conference? I feel like they're going to go to the finals. I thought my preseason pick was Philadelphia to the finals coming out of the East. But, I mean, obviously, I mean, Milwaukee's, they just seem so head and shoulders above everybody else in the conference. But who in your mind can present the biggest challenge for them right now?
I don't know
if there is even a team that can.
No, I gotta tell a story, and I don't know if this was on the record or off the record, but whatever, it's on the record now. And I was talking to Ryan Saunders like months ago, way before the Toronto Raptors won their, you know, they had their 15 game winning streak or anything, and they were just kind of like they're doing well without Kawhi story. You're like, cool. Mm-hmm. But I was still like, whatever, they're gonna be like a 5 seed, you know, nothing special. And I was talking to Ryan about that, and he goes, I think they're gonna win the East. And wow. I was like, whoa. He goes, yeah, and that was maybe, you know, I don't know if Ryan would say that again now, because the Bucks have obviously ascended, but it was earlier in the season. He goes, you've got a coach who absolutely knows what he's doing.
He's such a good coach.
And players who absolutely want to do what he says.
Yeah.
And, like, that can take you a long way. And the Raptors have shown they do have the talent. In Siakam, and Lauer has not lost a step at all this year.
He's been great, yeah.
And the surrounding pieces there too. Toronto has had a ton of injuries this year, and they're fine. They're 43-18. Like, I think they're for sure the best. They have the best chance, in my opinion, of taking down Milwaukee. And I don't think it's like the hottest of takes to say that they will. Anyone else, I can't really get on that level. Mm-hmm. I mean, Boston, if they get real funky with, like, you know, a four-man, like, Tatum, Brown, Hayward, you know, sort of front court thing where they can kind of punish Milwaukee, who, again, likes to drop their bigs back and play in that sort of way, mm-hmm. and just get really hot from three, like, maybe they can out-execute them in that sort of way, but... I like the way Toronto can theoretically match up. Some of this is like parroting Zach Lowe, listening to him talk about this the other day. But yeah, it's like the weak spot of Milwaukee's very, very good defense is, you know, finding a popping big in a pick and roll. And if that can be Marc Gasol, or if they can invert their pick and rolls with Siakam and Kyle Lowry, like that's a challenge for Milwaukee. And Eric Bledsoe is such a critical part of not just their offense. We think about him choking offensively. Like, mm-hmm. they need him defensively. And if he just doesn't have the mental makeup to do it, like,
because he disappeared
every
on them
year.
In the playoffs.
He's disappeared. The Sixers are looking at this now are the 6th seed. So I mean, it's hard to
They're
get too hyped on them. But
they can't win on the road. They're so bad on the road.
No. Do you think? Do you buy into the Kendrick Perkins of Miami could give him a run? Do you see that Kendrick Perkins said he thinks they're going to beat him?
I don't. Miami is. I like Miami, and I mean Jimmy sort of brought an attitude to that team that I think has really sort of propelled them to where they're at. I just Miami seems like a team, even though they've got Jimmy and Jimmy's been great for them. They just seem like a lot of their other pieces are not quite ready to take that next step yet. They're really young. I mean, they're getting some nice contributions from, you know, Tyler Hero, and I mean Bam has been terrific and everything.
Duncan Robinson too. Unreal shooter.
Yeah, and Kendrick Nunn has been great. But I just feel like it's like they're like a year away from, like they just like they need like another year to sort of. Get to that level.
In my opinion, they not only need another year, they need three things. They need another year of development for those younger guys and Bam to, you know, to maybe take even another step, Hero, those other young players to, you know, to get even better. Then I think they also need Jimmy Butler to not fall off at all. Like, he has to be this good a year from now, and he's not getting any younger.
Right.
And I think they need a...
He turns 31 later this year.
Yeah, and we know, I mean, he's put a lot of wear on and tear on that body. And I think they need a third piece. Or another, like, stud along with him. I just think it's... they don't have the talent, in my opinion, to... I mean, they have plenty of talent. They've exceeded their expectations this year.
Yep.
But if you talk about talent to compete with Milwaukee...
Whole another level, man.
Yeah, I don't think they're there. It seems pretty ridiculous to me to pick them over to pick them over Milwaukee, particularly when I have the like image in my head of like Jordan McLaughlin scoring buckets on them and D'Angelo Russell blocking right at the rim. It's like, I can't. If you lost to the Wolves at home, I don't know how you're going to fare against Giannis and the boys.
Yep. That is the voice of Dane Moore. You can follow him on Twitter at Dane Moore NBA. You can read his scribes on Zone Coverage. And you can follow me on Twitter at MannyHill84. And I'm usually tweeting about a lot of things or nothing. So follow us if you will. And give this podcast a favorable rating on iTunes if you will. We certainly appreciate that. You can find this podcast on iTunes and Spotify and wherever else you find podcasts as well. That has been Raised by Wolves. For Dane Moore, I'm Manny Hill. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.